This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Deeper into that with our guest as we look ahead to the Bills on Monday night. Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
How are we, Kevin?
I'm good, very well. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad, Kevin.
Better now.
We'd be better with 5 wins than 4 wins and a tie, but you know, can't have it all your own way.
Hey, everybody would be better with one more or whatever it is.
Very true. not penalties though. Not one more penalty.
So what's going on?
Nothing. That's what we're going to do. Is just going to preview this week's game, obviously. Just want to thank you, first off, obviously, for joining us. It was really good to see you back in the chair on Sunday night. Was it good to be back in the studio?
You know what? I really enjoyed it, man. You know, but also, it's always great when you have, you know, guests who are there to give out information, to have a good time, and, you know, and there's no ego involved. So it was a perfect day for me. I mean, I really enjoyed one being back, but also the quality of guests that I had to work with.
Yeah, was any mention of bounties made towards Mr. Boldinger after his comment?
No. We left that alone.
Before we get into the game, you've been one of the most consistent faces or voices, obviously, on TV with the recent surge of popularity of the sport over here. How have you seen that change since the first International Series game up until now?
I mean, I just go by, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, Alistair Kirkwood, the managing director for NFL UK, came on the show. And what he said, now these are his words, not my words. He said that when we first started back in 90s, late 90s, that NFL was the 17th most watched sport on TV, and now it had moved up to the 6th most watched sport on television. So, you know, I see people on the street, you know, that want to come up and chat or whatever, then you go to the games and you see all these people, and, you know, folks always say, I mean, are they mainly American? I go, no, those are British people who are into the sport, who are coming to the game. So, I mean, this improved. You know, the thing that's great is that I see you have a lot of fathers or uncles or older brothers who are bringing the youngsters along with them. So, you know, that's the health of the game right there, is to continue with, you know, having that next generation of people participating. And so, I mean, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, so on that, so what do you think the next step is for the game over here? Is it the franchise, or is it just keep doing more games and or stuff, or is it growing of the game at grassroots, or what do you think will be the next step?
I see that eventually they have to put a franchise here. I mean, that's going to happen, you know, so it's just a matter of when. Is it 3 years, is it 5 years, is it 10 years? I mean, I don't know, but they only can, and I have to look at it from a financial side, they only can milk that market in America for so much more. Hmm. You know, now this is a new market, a completely new financial market for the NFL. And so, you know, you're looking at it from a financial point, you know, it's going to happen because they see that the audiences are getting bigger, the people are getting more knowledgeable, the interest is picking up all the time. So I think this is one of those cases of it's going to happen just because of the finances of it. There's new finances out there in this market than what you have in the United States.
Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, the TV deals as well, they need to offer, as you said, offer something different. Adam, you had a question for Kev?
Yeah, a couple of things. On that, with the franchise thing, I mean, we're Seahawks fans, and as okay. great as it would be for us to have a team, there's no chance that I'm going to change my team because you we have one to. Here. Yeah, do you think that's to. A risk that I have to?
No, I said you don't have to.
Oh, you don't have
love
to.
Who you love.
Yeah, do you think that could be a risk for the long term of a UK franchise here, that they may just not drum up enough support that 8 times a year they can fill 70,000 seats, bearing in mind a lot of the current fans already have a team?
Not really, because, you know, you're in the States, you know, just because you live in Buffalo don't mean you have to like the Bills. You can like New England, you can like Pittsburgh, but I'll still go see the Bills play. You know, I still like to see football. You know, mm-hmm. so it's a case of you going to see, you know, football. If your favorite team happens to be playing in that game, then that's great. But if you have opportunity to go see football, you go see football. So I don't think that, you know, they're even expecting people to change their allegiances. But, you know, maybe get a little, you know, maybe you get some of the people that get a connection with the London team. They don't have to say, okay, I don't like this other team anymore. You know, I can like two teams. There's always room for two.
Sure.
Unless it's two wives.
and how do you think the players would react to moving over here?
I mean, that's the thing. You know, who knows? You know, the thing what you have is, I mean, you know, most likely, you know, the team will be in London. London is one of the most expensive cities in the world. So you're coming from the places in the States, and now you're coming to London. Then what do you do with your families? You know, if you have kids, do they come here yeah. during the football season? Do you just stay away from your family during the football season? You know, that's the things that have to be worked out. You know that. And come to an agreement with, you know, and that's why they don't know if the players, you know, if they have a team, will the team be based here or will they just play here? So that's the things that you're dealing with. So I think, you know, if the players, as long as they're getting their money, they will be okay.
Fair. It makes sense. Especially they're getting paid in dollars these days. They'll be owning parts of London before soon. I did my money transfer yesterday because I'm flying out for the game tomorrow, and that was a painful moment for me. I have to say, I feel like I've lost money, let alone game.
Oh yeah, yeah. We used to have that advantage, but we've lost it.
Yeah. So not fun. So, Kev, when you watch games with obviously your coaching experience, in British basketball and all the success you had there. A lot of it translates, right? So when you're watching games and teams crumble in like the fourth quarter, you have like with the Seahawks a couple of weeks ago, we had Sherman and Chris Richard going at it, screaming at each other. You've got OBJ and he's kicking net. You've got Dez skipping MRIs and all the rest of it. Do you think how you'd deal with the so-called issues like that if you were still coaching?
You know what? It has become such a difficult thing now because of so much money that's involved. The players themselves, I mean, the one thing, I mean, you know, I'm sure the football players are the same, you know, they have their own physios. So, you know, it's not, you know, a lot of times what their physio says, okay, you're ready to come back. Now it's gotten to the point of the players, their physiotherapists, they tell them, okay, now you're ready to come back. You know, so it's a whole different set of dynamics that you're dealing with, but you learn to adjust. You learn to deal with it. It's the same problems in sports. Sport is the same. Whether football, baseball, basketball, hockey, whatever, cricket, you're going to still have those emotional outbursts. You're going to still have guys who you have to put a little bit more of a hammer on. You know, other guys you have to cuddle a little bit. So it's all the same. But it's part of the coaching. It's part of the coaching game that you have to understand you're dealing with people. And everyone is not the same. Even though you want to try to treat people the same, and they'll say that we want to treat everybody the same, it's impossible to treat everybody the same because there's different dynamics and the personalities are so volatile now. And also you're getting people who, you know, now they're adults. And so you're getting these people who, like you say with Dez, whatever Dez is doing in Dallas, he didn't just start doing that in Dallas. He was doing that in the lead up to coming to Dallas. So, you know, so you're inheriting a lot of problems that are already there, and you try the best you can to navigate it. It's going to always be problems, different situations. The way people react to something is going to be completely different one from another, and the coach has to have that flexibility. You know, if you try, you know, unless you get it established early, where it's like New England. You know, New England has it established. The San Antonio Spurs have it established that you come in, you do it our way or just the highway. So, you know, if you go there, You know, you better be on your P's and Q's. But other teams have not established that mentality in their organization, and thus by not having it established, they will continue to deal with these kind of problems. You don't hear people in New England, you know, guy got hurt, he missing his physio treatment, he's not doing this, he's not coming for this. You know, if they come late, you know, Belichick is probably everybody except Brady. You know, if you come late, you might be missing the next game. You might be missing something. So guys know to be on their P's and Q's with teams like New England and San Antonio, but there's so many other teams, there's the majority of the teams, they haven't set that parameters like as such. And so there's a lot of leeway, and if you give guys leeway, believe me, they're gonna take full advantage of it.
Yeah, Adam?
Just on that, with player mentality and bringing it back to the Seahawks slightly, the last few weeks have seen complete different fortunes on either side of the ball, and at this stage, our defense is completely carrying our offense through games. In Denver last year, I imagine that wasn't a problem at all because they were winning. When you start losing or not winning, how hard is it to keep your guys on track that are doing all the good work and covering for others? And as a coach, how do you do that? Because it must be very difficult to keep picking guys up who are already performing when they're seeing their teammates not do their jobs for them.
The one thing as a coach, you got to stay consistent. Your approach has to still continue to be consistent. The same approach that we use when we're successful, though we're slipping up right now, we still have to have that same approach. You might have to tweak it here and there, but you have to keep up with the same approach. You get it where when, you know, masking wins, what they say, wins mask a lot of deficiencies. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden you're losing, and all of a sudden these deficiencies start to show up. They're brighter than what they were before. And just as a coach, your job is to still control the situation. Not to let it get out of hand, not to get to the point of where people start finger pointing. Now you're saying, well, the offense is not doing it, but the defense is doing it, you know. So, you know, you have to keep it where no one is pointing the finger. You don't hear Carroll pointing the finger at the offense or the defense. It's always a we thing. And once you start having, you find yourself in the situations where you're being unsuccessful, we has to even become more and more into the situation, which stops people from looking at others and trying to find that excuse. Because the thing is now, when you start losing, people start looking for excuses on why. You know, why this happened, remember, he would have been doing this, but he was doing that before, but you were winning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to exaggerate, as they say, the we, when things are not going as well as you would like them to go.
Yeah, and also with the personalities they've got, as you said, especially in Seattle with Sherman and how outspoken a lot of the people are, it becomes a powder keg, wouldn't it, after a few weeks, becomes months and all that kind of thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you know, he understands Sherman. You know, I mean, you have the personality, and the guys on the team, you know Sherman is, you know, he's going to run his mouth. You know, there's certain people that everybody knows, you know, after you've been there for a minute, then you know the personality of that person. So, you know, Sherman's not like all of a sudden Russell Wilson turns into a Sherman. You know, now that would be something different, you know, but Sherman has always been that way. So they know that, you know, he's going to speak his mind. He's going to speak his opinion. And he was speaking his opinion when we were winning, and he's not going to change now that, you know, that we're running into a couple problems. So, and maybe sometimes with guys speaking their opinions, it comes to the forefront even more when you hear from the players, as long as they take ownership. You know that, you know, certain guys need to be doing this. That anonymous source, no. You know, if you take ownership, then, you know, then you have less confusion as far as where you stand and where they stand. And a guy like Sherman, he's going to take ownership. So there's never going to be an anonymous, you know, around somebody said, you know, Sherman is going to stand up. This is what I said. This is how I feel about it. And anybody else that wants to debate me on it, let's debate about it. So, yeah. So, you know, sometimes having the guys like that, you need somebody to have a loud mouth to put it out there, to express some of the things that the coach probably has been saying. But sometimes, you know, like you're a parent. You could be saying something to your kid 100 times, but it's not until somebody else says it that it resonates with them. So I think that if you got a guy like Pete Carroll, I'm sure he is not against Sherman or guys like that speaking up and saying what they need to say, because, you know, shit's a man's game. You know, they're out there, they're men, you know, be men. This is what's happening. You can see what's happening. In most cases, you know what's happening anyway. You know, yeah, so it's not like you don't know. That obviously it's a shock and surprise that they said, I'm not doing my job. You know if you're doing your job or not.
Yeah, definitely. Russ?
Yeah, hi, Kev. When a team loses a player like Marshawn Lynch, he was the driving force, I think, for the offense, even when he wasn't playing. How hard is that to kind of replace a figure like that?
I mean, it's difficult, you know, because he brought something completely different that they haven't been able to replace. But then you have to start looking at other ways that I can replace his production. Mm. So, you know, it's very difficult because he was that man, you know, and there's not a lot of teams that have the man on their squad. You know, you got a man with Gronkowski, you know, yeah. with New England. But I look at Buffalo, I don't see a man. I look at New York Jets, I don't see a man. I look at Miami, I don't see a man. You know, so, you know, those guys are hard to come by. They're hard to replace. So what you have to do is start looking at other ways that other people maybe that you can get a little bit more out of others to replace that production of the man that you no longer have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to the game. Just before we get into it, though, just want to give a brief history on the why and the what on you and the Buffalo Bills and how your fandom came to be.
Well, I mean, I grew up in Buffalo, so I'm from Buffalo. That's my family. Everybody from Buffalo is a Buffalo Bill fan. You know, so, I mean, that's just how it is. So, and I only live two blocks away from the stadium. I used to go after the games. I'd watch the games or listen to them on the radio and cut through my buddy's yard, and I'd be right at the stadium. So I used to go there and get O.J. Simpson's autograph every week until one day he said to me, son, you come here every week and you get my autograph. What do you do with them autographs? I'm like, I throw them away. You know, they don't pay autographs back. You know, so and then once I went to a game. My pop said to me, "I have a ticket," and because I used to go. I mean, because back in the day with in that War Memorial Stadium, the old stadium the Bills used to play in, they used to have this game that I used to go to every year. It was the College All-Stars would play against a team from the National Football League. I just remember, I don't know if it was all the time or summertime, but I just, for some reason, I remember the Dallas Cowboys coming to Buffalo to play against this college all-star team. And so, you know, every year I used to go, which, I mean, now they wouldn't even think of doing that. That was like, I'm sure it was probably late July, early August, but they would, like I said, they wouldn't even think of doing that right now. But my pop gave me a ticket to go to this game. It's in the middle of the winter. It was so cold in that stadium that I did not move the entire time. So this, I'm sitting there by myself, and this older guy, he taps me on the shoulder, probably in the third or fourth quarter. He goes, "Son, so are you all right there?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Uh-huh." So now I try to stand up, and I couldn't stand up because I was frozen to the seat. So they had to pull me up out the seat, and I told my pop when I got home, I will never go to another game in the wintertime again in my life. So that was my, my thing. But I used to go whenever I had the opportunity to go see the Bills whenever it was possible. But, you know, I mean, as far as watching on TV, listening on the radio, I grew up as a Bills fan.
Yeah. So fast forward to 2016. What are the Bills looking like so far this year? Obviously, you fired the OC after a few weeks, and that seems to spark into life somewhat.
They started off slow, then they had their little winning streak, and then, then the injuries started to come with McCoy, you know, who's such a vital part of their team. The last 2 weeks, the defense has kind of dropped off a little bit. For me, I don't know. I like Rex. I thought Rex was a good selection coming in as a coach. And if he just concentrates on coaching and shuts up, you know, that's, you know, I mean, that's basically, and the thing is because, you know, there's an art to trash talking. And in sports, trash talking is a major part of America. Matter of fact, trash talking is a major part of American society. You know, that's what we do. And so now you put it on the field. And the thing is, Rex was doing all this trash talking last year, and these young guys that he had didn't know that trash talking is not personal. You know, it's just a thing that you do. And so they were taking it personal, getting all the personal fouls at the wrong time, not being able to control it. You know, so he's done a little bit better job this year. But, I think they've dealt with so many injuries. You know, you got Sammy Watkins, who really hasn't been able to play or contribute. I mean, that's your number, your number one receivers. And Robert Woods goes down. And, then now you got McCoy dealing with injury problems. The first round, second round draft pick, they get injured. I think that he's doing a credible job. I just thought, that they blew the game. Against Miami, they were there and exhaled and let that through. But I think they still they have a shot at maybe getting a wild card. It ain't over with yet, but they just need to get over those injury problems.
Rex is never going to change, but do you think he brings some of these problems of expectation on himself with some of the ways that he hypes his team up, guaranteeing the playoffs last year? Does that really help anyone as a player or in an organization to do that, as opposed to being a little bit more understated with it?
I don't know if it helps or hurts, but it's like this. If you're coaching and whoever is paying you, if they pay you $5 or $10 million, they still want you to come in first place. So, so for him to express it and say it, this is what we're doing, to say it out loud to the public, I'm sure every coach, if you're not, I don't know why you're coaching, that you're expressing to your team, it's about us winning the championship. It's about us coming in first place. If that's not part of your conversation, as a coach, then, maybe you ought to maybe try a different profession. So, I have no problem with, Rec being boisterous about it, but it's just a case of, being boisterous and saying the right things at the right time. For him to say, hey, we're coming to win the championship, why not? That's what it's all about. But to do some of the trash talking that he was doing last year when it was unnecessary, and the guys didn't really know how to handle it, like this year. I mean, this last weekend, you're here in the paper, the guys talking about, yeah, if New England does this, then it's going to be another fight. What about the game? Are you getting ready for the game? For that to even come out, that lets you know that their concentration is not where it needs to be. If you're only 95% on the game, then you're not getting ready for the contest. So that for me was a serious, like, are you kidding me? That is even being discussed and even talked about, that if they come across a line and we're gonna get them again. Come on, man. Where was the fight? Ain't no fight. Football players don't fight. Basketball players don't fight. Your football players don't fight. The only one that's in the football player that fights is that fool that takes his helmet off to fight somebody with their helmet off. Yeah.
So, as a Bills fan, from the outside looking in, what are your thoughts on the Seahawks?
I think we're gonna tear them up on Monday night. Other than that, we got problems, but they got problems too. The Seahawks still have Russell, and I think that's one of the things that they still have with them. They still have the quarterback, even though he's dealing with all these injury problems and trying to fight through it and trying to continue to be out there and for his team. I think that, one of the things that they're going to need to get established is they got to get that running game established. I don't think there's a consistency, again, they're dealing with some injury problems, they're themselves, but they have to somehow get that running game established. They can get that running game, because that was the whole key, last year, why, Baldwin and crew were able to be so effective is because they could depend on the running game. You had to respect that, and now, the running game is not giving them a whole lot. Plus, it's hard for Russell to take off and run himself.
Yeah. So we spoke earlier about how the Jimmy Graham usage, from the outside, is it as baffling on the outside as it is being a Seahawks fan and seeing how little he's getting of the ball and stuff in Seattle?
Well, I mean, it's a different attack. You look at, New Orleans, their running backs get the ball about three times a game, so it's a different, he took the money and he just put himself in a different situation. It's a different kind of ball game. But the last, I think I saw something with statistically versus his first two games versus the last three or four games that, Russell seemed to be looking for him more, and his numbers seemed to have improved dramatically. So I think it's, you know, one with that connection of him and Russell have to become more in tune with connection, but it's not the same Jimmy Graham that you had in New Orleans because it's a different passing attack.
Yeah. So if you're in the Seahawks building, how would you tell them, and where would you point to for them to attack the Bills and win on Monday night, Kev?
I say if we run it, if we pass it, and if we play defense, we're going to beat the Bills. you know, I think, you know, now what I see, you know, is that you got a guy like Jimmy Graham. You saw how Gronk, I mean, I couldn't believe how Gronk was the four touchdown passes that Brady threw, he could have threw them passes with his eyes closed. These guys were so wide open, you know. So, you know, I think, for a guy like, for Jimmy Graham, for instance, all of a sudden you say, okay, there's going to be some opportunities. You know, the Bears, you know, with the Bills losing Aaron Williams on the back end, you know, they kept making mistake after mistake after mistake. I think that, you know, was a big problem there, losing him at the safety position. If I'm them, you know, I look at the Bills and I look to attack via the air, because that seems to be, you know, I mean, but then again, you know, the week before was, you know, Jay Ajayi running all over him. So, you know, it's just a case of, but just for me, coming off of last week's game, I have to say, you know, that the opportunities to attack by the air probably would be open.
Yeah. So what Bills players should we look out for as possible dangers and stuff? Me and Adam are going to be in the stadium on Monday night with obviously 68,000 rather intoxicated, I think I'll use the word.
Boisterous.
Seahawks fans. So what Bills players should we be looking out for to be ones to watch and stuff, Kev?
Well, hopefully McCoy can play. You know, I mean, that's the one thing that, Gillisley, I thought, you know, he did a good job running the ball, but it seemed like every time after he touched the ball, he had to walk off the field because they just banged him up some way or another. But he's dealing with a toe injury as well. I think quarterback is going to maybe have to do a little bit more with this team. Defensively, you know, you look at them, Darby, that would be a nice matchup, you know, him and Baldwin. That could be a pretty decent matchup. But I think the one guy who has to now come, you know, he had the one game, is that, you know, Marcell Dareus, that mm-hmm. he's going to have to come in and, you know, and be a force. If he can come in and be a force, and if they can control that, you know, mm-hmm. the running game, then that would help the Bills, you know, tremendously on the pass defense side. And if Aaron Williams, you know, I mean, that's the quarterback. You know, I think they were missing their quarterback for sure, you know, last week, but also missing him down the stretch in the, you know, in the Miami game. So I think that's a big miss, you know, by them not having them. But let's see if he can make it back.
Yeah. So it's a short notice, but are you flying out with us on Thursday morning?
Yeah, I'll be on the plane. Yeah.
But Adam Ross, yes. Speaking of
players, and this game has now become a bit of a revenge game because yesterday Percy Harvin unretired himself. So. Do we think that maybe he might come back and put a sting in the tail of the Seahawks fans that he pleased so much in Super Bowl 48, Kev?
Man, what has Percy Harvin been doing about the last 11
months? Crazy, huh?
Okay, you know, so anything they get from him is a plus. But expectations on this side are absolutely zero.
Yeah, on the Seattle side, Ross Adam. We can give some Kev some intel there. Who's one to watch on the offense for you, Russ?
I think CJ Procise is due a proper breakout game. He had 80 yards on 4 receptions last week and 20 odd yards on the ground. I think he's due for another. He's our own little version of Shady McCoy, who can excite with electric plays. I think he's going to have a decent game.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm really excited by what he can bring if he stays healthy. Adam.
Jimmy Graham's always going to be my guy to watch. I can't wait to see him play. And Doug Baldwin's had a couple of quiet weeks, so hopefully we can get back to him being Russell's go-to guy, and he can put up some numbers again because his production's been badly missed in the last couple of weeks.
Almost. I don't know how many targets he got on Sunday, but it wasn't many. So, Kev, who do you see the defensive side of the ball keen in on Seattle? Who would be the...
Is Bennett going to be back?
No,
he's got 2 more weeks out, unfortunately.
And who else? Who else? Who else are you missing? You missing one of the safeties.
Cam Chancellor's 50-50.
Oh, okay.
It's been strange. They've really not discussed his injury at all. We were saying earlier that there might be something a bit murkier going on with him because it's been very convoluted with how his injury has been reported. And Carroll on Monday said that I think they'll find out today on the first day of practice this week, or maybe tomorrow because they give him an extra day off for a Monday game, what's going to happen. But I think there's something slightly strange going on with him, and which is a shame because he's a key part to the defense, obviously.
I think a big advantage would be is that, you know, Sherman against any of the Bills receivers, that basically shuts down whatever side of that field is, you know. So now, you know, the Bills become one-handed, and I think that's a big advantage because I don't think the Bills have anybody on that, you know, in that receiving end who can consistently, even sometime, give him a problem where they're going to have to worry about maybe giving help so they can give help in other areas. So I think that's a big benefit for them in that game against the Bills.
Is Marquise Goodwin fit, Kev? Was he had a concussion, didn't he, I think?
Yeah, you know, in and out. You know, I mean, he's been, you know, 1 week he's in, 1 week he's out. And that's been the story of, you know, their receiving core, running backs, you know, throughout this season. You know, they just, you know, quarterback just doesn't know week to week who he's going to hand off to or who he's going to be throwing the ball to, more so who he's going to be throwing the ball to, because Shady has been out there for, you know, up until the last two games.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just that receiver situation is in a flux. Every game is somebody. I mean, that's why they picked up Hunter, you know, off the street trying to get him and incorporate him. That's why they're picking up Percy Harvin. It's just because the receiving core is just so, you know, so dismantled. And each and every week, someone else, is going to be the guy that's dropping out for one reason or another.
Yeah. On for Seattle on defensive side, Adam, who's someone you're going to be watching on Monday night if you can see, obviously?
Well, I've loved watching Tyrod Taylor run the ball this year. I mean, he has probably overtaken Wilson as the best rushing quarterback in the league at the minute.
Ty God.
Yeah, Ty God, as you call him. So I think Bobby Wagner's going to have to be a bit of a spy for the game. And if I had to pick someone to do that job, I can't think of a better guy than 54.
No, yeah. I think, as Kevin's pointing on, with all the receivers' injuries they've got, I think Taylor is going to have to run it more. And Bobby Wagner, as you said, he's playing out of his skin at the minute. For me on defense, it probably is yet again Earl Thomas, because obviously the arm that Tyrod Taylor's got is an absolute gun of an arm. He's going to be throwing it deep. He isn't scared to throw it deep. So Earl Thomas patrolling that, the insurance policy, as we keep going back to Gavin Hart said a few weeks ago. I think for me it's Earl Thomas. Ross, let's pick someone who isn't going to be cut or injured by Monday night.
I'll try. Can't guarantee anything. I want to go for the two guys in the middle, but Daniel and Ruben and Jaron Reed in that rotation. I think they were really underrated against the Saints. I think they've been really good all season. They don't give up massive chunk plays through the middle, and they're just important in every game, especially against a team that's going to run quite a lot of the time.
Yeah, most definitely. So we get on to predictions. Kev, what's your score prediction for Monday?
I say probably 17-13 Seattle.
Nice. Adam?
I'll take that. I've had Wilson in my fantasy team every week, and for the first time, he's out. So I think you can almost guarantee a free touchdown, 300-yard, the works coming from Russ this week. Well, it has to be, because we've got to get this offense ignited. So I'm going to go Seahawks 24, Bills 14.
Yeah, nice. Ross?
I'm exactly the same as Kev. I'm not going massive this week. 17-13. Just defense wins the day.
You're a bit gun shy after the last couple of weeks.
I've been burned 4 weeks in a row.
For me, I think 27-10, 27-13, something like that. But anything you'd like to finish on, Kevin? Obviously, your book's still in circulation. The Cadle Will Rock.
Yeah, still in circulation. So I didn't go to kevincadle.com and grab it if they, you know, if they like. Be a great Christmas present for someone, you know. But and it's going pretty well, man. It was great, you know, with the guy Paul New, that we sat down and you know, it took us about a year and a half to put it all together and write it and do all other stuff. But it was, you know, it took me down memory lane to be doing it. So, and it's a lot of motivational stuff in there, too. So that's, you know, it's not just a thing of just telling stories. There's a lot of motivational action in there as well. So, which was what my coaching was all about, is just, you know, trying to be the motivational guy, the preparation guy, to get them to ready to go out there and to perform as best as they could.
Yeah, as we've plugged this, you joining us on the podcast, there's been Cameron Welsh has said that he just wants to know how much he appreciated all the success and everything you did for the basketball up north of the border in Scotland. So I thought I'd just mention that as it is something that's still remembered fondly up there.
Oh, okay. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. Adam?
Just one more question from me, Kevin. Yeah. I mean, as you saw when we were in Manchester and you came and did that great talk for us,
yep.
The Seahawks, as do all of the 31 teams in this country, there's a really thriving fan base for each individual team. And I was wondering if you thought that there might be a way that NFL UK could sort of better engage us and do more fan meetups and things like that. Is there anything you can see in the future that might be good for that?
You know, they do I know with Neil and they have it where they have the guys come in and do the panel stuff. I don't know how people get involved with that. So that's, you know, that's not on my on my scope of things there. But I would, you know, would have thought that maybe you need to put an idea to them, you know, because, you know, they're trying to do this, and this, and mm-hmm. maybe they haven't thought that. So maybe it'd be a case of you and some of the other supporters clubs throwing ideas at them, and maybe it'll open up some things, because maybe they're not thinking that way. Maybe they're just thinking fans as a whole versus, you know, fans who happen to be involved with a particular supporters club. So yeah. I would say introduce yourself to them. That might be the way to get it done and throw some creative ideas at them. Maybe you can see some things happening from that.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I think I can speak for Adam and Ross as well. I just really do greatly appreciate you joining us today, Kev. Well, Cecil's been in touch with us. He wants to be on the podcast, so if you could have a word with him and get him on in the near future.
Okay.
Obviously, we'll be busy in a few weeks with carving the turkeys and everything.
I got you. So hopefully they'll have him back for that. I don't know. You know, everything is new around there now, new and different. Yeah. So who knows? But hopefully they will, have him back on the show either for that or at some other stage throughout the season.
Yeah, and we'll have Neil, but he has to soften his hatred for the Seahawks just a little bit. Just a bit. Give us 5%. 5%.
Just a little bit. Okay, I'll let him know that.
Y'all feel that? Hey, this is how we're going to get it done today. It's going to take everybody. Feel that man next to you. Because when you're weak, that's who you're leaning on. When you need to play, that's who you're leaning on. When you don't think you can get it done, that's who you're doing it for. If y'all want to get this done, we're going to do it together. We're going to ride. It's going to take time, fellas. Let's get
so here on the Pedestrian Podcast, we do try and treat our listeners every now and then. This week is one such of those occasions. Instead of hearing us groan on about the Seahawks, we've managed to get a guest to bring a bit of some gravitas to proceedings. Not just any guest, a former Big Ten champ with Penn State, a semi-finalist in 2005 for the Davey O'Brien Award, a man who came fifth in the 2005 Heisman voting before being a fourth-round NFL draft pick, and of course, a Super Bowl champion. Michael Robinson, how are you, sir?
Doing great, man. Doing great, man. Glad to be a part of the show.
No, we massively, massively appreciate. We appreciate how busy you are going coast to coast and all your media responsibilities. Adam, any questions for Mike?
So I'm going to start off in the college days. So I was listening to the Dave Damashek football program, and he had Cliff Averill on. And Cliff was asked, who was the hardest quarterback he's ever faced to bring down? And unbelievably, well, maybe not unbelievably, he mentioned a Penn State quarterback, Mike Robinson. So apparently you were a bit of a quarterback in your day as well.
Yeah, man. Yeah, quarterback was my first love. I always had natural leadership. I had a little league coach a long time ago told me to be wary of what I say around a lot of people, because when I talk, people listen. And seriously, man, it was one of those things that I knew right then and there that I had some leadership ability. So quarterback was kind of always my spot. But I think I came along probably 10 to 15 years too early.
Yeah, you'd be killing it now.
In today's draft, yeah, I would have been a maybe first, maybe second round pick. So, but it's all good, though. It's all good.
So at Penn State, obviously, my college fandom, I sort of caught the back end of it. What was working and playing in the Joe Paterno, like, as someone who's on, like, the Mount Rushmore of college coaches, what was that experience for you? Like,
oh, man, it was amazing. It was amazing. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be one of the captains of the team for, you know, 3 seasons. Out of the 5 years that I was there, I was fortunate enough to be a quarterback under his tutelage. I was fortunate enough to have a friend, a father figure, and a mentor going beyond my days on the football field. I mean, he's just a guy that I've always admired. And playing for him, it was a lot of pressure, quite honestly, because you always had his history and the fact that he coached all these great teams and these great young men. You always had that stuff kind of in the background. And when I was there early on in my career, we did well. Toward the middle, we kind of tailed off, and then toward the end, we got good again. And you know, our fans still filled the stadium to see Joe, to see the team, even though we were losing. And you know, he forced me and allowed me to grow and to think about things outside of football. There were so many things more important to Joe than football. That's why for his career to end the way that it ended. With the scandal, with the Jerry Sandusky stuff and all of those things, when all he wanted was the truth to come out, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, Adam?
Going from one sort of hugely influential figure to another, I know we're a bit pushed for time, so we'll skip straight to the NFL.
That's okay.
24, Marshawn, for me, in my opinion, you might disagree, I think he might be the most significant ever Seahawk in terms of the attitude that he brought. And for me, he changed the whole franchise and made us, you know, he was a dog, and he's someone that we really needed. Obviously, you were a good friend of his when you were with the team, and I'm sure you still are now. What is he like as a guy? I mean, is it what you see is what you get? But he just seems like the most amazing guy.
Well, first of all, he's my brother. You know, he's like one of my best friends. We talk about everything, anything. But to me, I'm really into spirituality, and I'm not a religious guy. I think religion separates us. I think spirituality brings us all together. And me and him talk about this stuff a lot. And I hate to use this word because of the contemporary way we look at it, but I've always told him he is a walking God. He is how we should be. Why? Because what he thinks becomes reality.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks to the beat of his own drum. How much freedom and liberation is that to be able to have an idea, see it through, and it becomes successful, and you don't care what anybody thinks of it? I mean, I was part of the media when the year after my Super Bowl, we won it at the end of the 2013 season. And then they went back again at the end of the 2014 season. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of media day and all of those things. And I was also fortunate enough to, you know, be on conference calls and try to, you know, figure out how Marshawn was going to operate media day. And, you know, we kind of figured out what he was going to say. And, you know, I talked to his people, and him and I had a lot of conversations. And he said what he said, you know, I'm only here so I don't get fined, boss, and all of those types of things to the media. And then he jumped in his Sprinter, and I was one of the people that jumped in with him with some more family and friends. And he literally, I sat here and I watched and I counted like 25 interviews on his beat, on his way. And he answered every question. He was very outright. He was very revealing. He was very candid. But nobody covers that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And again, man, he I'm telling you, he's that guy.
So to stick with Super Bowl 49, it's funny. You probably saw him interviewed with Matt Barnes a couple of weeks ago. And it was amazing hearing him talk about the play that ultimately is going to transcend the franchise until we win another one. Second and goal from the one. But he's the first player I've heard speak about it that genuinely seems to have inner peace about the whole situation.
Well, he can have inner peace, right? Because, I mean, he had no expectations to be one thing I love about him. Man, he don't expect anything out of anybody. He gives you the energy you give back to him. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, he just kind of walked off the field. And, you know, he's told me that story before. I saw that interview. There's also things that I can't say about what sure. happened in the locker room afterwards with the team. But, man, it was a great interview. But, yeah, man, Marshawn, man, he does his thing. He walks by the beat of his own drum. And I think it's something that we all should kind of look at and try to mimic.
Well, it says a lot to me about his humility, because ultimately – a lot of other players that I'm sure you know have been with in the past want to be the guy that, you know, is on the posters and is the story, but he's the humility he's shown to publicly go crazy about that when the general thinking was that he could have been the guy to bring the second Super Bowl home. You know, that shows an awful lot of character on his part.
Well, yeah, and it's funny that, you know, you guys aren't American media, and you notice it. I haven't heard a story about the humility or the character of Marshawn being, you know, all engulfing and all encompassing and having compassion for everybody and all those types of things. You know what I mean? It's crazy that media sometimes outside of our country realizes those things about our players more than our media does.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's more than welcome to come on and talk to us if you want to give him a, you know, a quality group that he can speak
to. If I talk to him about it, he would probably love to come on you guys' podcast. He does this type of stuff.
That'd be awesome.
We'll do 3 a.m., 4 a.m., whatever time he wants.
Yeah, it'll probably be after, you know, after the bar one night, you know, just kind of hanging out.
So also with that 2013 team, 2012, you were the person who caught the first Russell Wilson playoff touchdown throw against Washington. In that 2012 season, something always sticks with me is I think an interview you did, or maybe one of your Real Rob Report videos, when you called Russell Wilson a bad man. How quickly did it take you and the rest of the guys in that building to realize what you had at that quarterback and what was working with him like? And obviously, fast forward to when you saw him a few weeks ago at camp, has there been a change in him over the 7-8 years since?
Well, yeah, man, it's definitely been a change, but it's a natural change, right? Yeah. You know, you go from being a, you know, third round, you know, rookie quarterback stepping, you know, short rookie quarterback that nobody expects anything from, and you come in, get the starting job. You go to a couple of Super Bowls, you're a couple of plays away from a third, and, you know, yeah, things are different, and you're obviously a millionaire now, you know, so things are different.
Yeah.
I think for me, you know, Russell's from Richmond, Virginia. I'm actually out here in Richmond, Virginia now. I'm at my son's youth football practice. I run and operate a youth football league, one of the largest youth football leagues in the state of Virginia, Excel to Excellence Youth Football. And I remember Russell coming up to me, or I being introduced to Russell after a state championship game that I played in 1999, I think.
Oh, wow.
And he was in the seventh grade at the time. And, you know, lo and behold, we never knew that our paths would cross again in mini camp of 2012, you know, his rookie season. And I remember getting a call from our general manager, John Snyder, because I was a team leader. And he called me and said, hey, man, I know we paid all this money to Matt Flynn, but we're really thinking about playing the rook, you know. And I had seen his work ethic. We had seen this guy come in, lead every drill, all of those things. But he was a little bit behind as far as passing the football, because Matt Flynn had just had more experience.
Yeah.
But you could see the determination of Russell. You can see the innate ability to get away from certain pressures. You can see the running ability, all of the things that we see now on display. And, you know, Snyder said, hey, man, I think I'm going to do this. And, you know, what do you think about the locker room? And I said, I know at first it'll be a little kickback, but if he's our guy, he's our guy. You know, he's a VA guy, so my opinion is a little skewed. You know what I mean? I want him to go. You know, I want him to play. And we lost our home opener, man. We lost to Arizona, and the team on the plane, on the ride back, the team was kind of split. And I remember hearing the conversations, and I know Russell could hear the conversations, but I remember us getting off the plane, and he looked at me and said, Mike, we're not going to have too many of these days. Don't worry. We're not going to have too many of these days. And lo and behold, we go on to the playoffs, and we lose to Atlanta by 27 seconds. But the day that I knew he was the guy was probably the Chicago game of that season. Mm-hmm. He led us back, led us back from being behind, all of those things, hit Sidney Rice in the touchdown and hit Sidney Rice for a touchdown in overtime. To me, that game kind of epitomized who he is. We weren't expected to win that game. We weren't expected to be in that game, but we won, you know, and it was awesome to see.
I remember watching that game and running around my apartment. And funny, because I was going to ask you what was the moment you thought, because I was at the game against Minnesota, I think 3 or 4 weeks before, when he had his real first breakout game at home. And it was just, I think at that point, all the fans around me were thinking, okay, there, this guy's got something. When it comes to being a player that, you know, he wasn't a first round draft pick, or, you know, neither was Sherman. And, you know, so many players in the team that are heralded from a lower draft pick. At what point is it in practice, or is it in a game with players where you as a more senior guy look around and think, okay, this guy's got something, or is it just completely different for every player?
Well, it's different for every player. But for me, I mean, I can see it in practice, and that just gives me hope. But when I see it in the game, it gives me conviction about you. And for me, it was really that Chicago game where I said, okay, all right. Well, if this kid continues to mature, continues to get his confidence together, I mean, make these passes that he made today, and we can run the football with authority, our defense is at a championship level. It's just about how many of these things can we win before, you know, ego, I don't mean to say ego, but before people having to be paid kind of messes this thing up. So we kind of figured that it was going to happen.
Did you sort of need Atlanta to happen for the following year to happen?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it helped some, but I don't think we needed it to happen. What I do know is if we could have came out of Atlanta with a win, we had just beat the 49ers by, I don't know, 35 points, 40 points. the week before, we were averaging 50 points a game going into, you know, the last four or five games of the season. And I remember calling Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis on the bus after we had lost. And, you know, they were, you know, saying we, you know, kind of talking a little trash or whatever, but they didn't want to play us. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of figured, man, if we could have got out of Atlanta, we may have, you know, been in line for that first Super Bowl, his Russell's rookie year in 2012.
Yes, obviously a big part, and we had so many responses along these lines about the Real Rob report back when you were in Seattle. How much were they as much fun to do as they were to watch?
Yeah, man, it was super fun, man. And for me, it was I would call Real Rob report professional development. I mean, I did have a plan for the Real Rob report, and I still kind of work on some things with it. But and you can see Players Tribune pretty much doing it now. Mm-hmm. That was kind of my idea first. But I wanted to get all of my bad, you know, commentating, all of my bad analysis, all the mess ups, all the, you know, kind of anxiety of being on the camera, knowing a lot of people are going to watch it and all of those types of things. I also took it as an opportunity to, you know, hone in on my editing. I also took it as an opportunity to script write and all of those things. To kind of learn everything about the broadcasting business kind of on my own, kind of grassroots. And I think it truly helped me in getting the job that I have today.
It's funny, obviously we come at from completely the other side, but almost when you say making your mistakes, for me as a fan watching it, seeing vulnerabilities and mistakes, like adding some human quality to what we look at as sports stars, I actually find that the most endearing part. And it often strikes me that sports stars, and I'm sure they know and they do a lot of stuff, but if all of them realized how much fans sort of enjoy seeing these guys as human beings as well as sports stars, you almost get a pass in terms of performance. Like, because you, when you're rooting for the guy, I think it always makes it a bit easier to stomach when things don't go well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's when it goes back to kind of Marshawn and what we talked about earlier, that freedom. When you kind of beat to the tune of your own drum, and you have that freedom to just, you know, think of things, do your own thing, I think it's liberating. And I think that's why guys like him, you know, you got some other guys out there that kind of express themselves in their own unique way. That's why they're popular. That's why they're able to make money off of that particular persona.
Yeah. So, as I said a few minutes ago, you have been back to VMAC this summer. And if anyone hasn't seen it, I think it's on YouTube. It's a really cool piece on the Seahawks. Obviously, a lot of big names, a lot of big loud voices, a lot of big personalities have left that building. Was it a noticeable difference this year around when you walked in that building? And have you seen people like Doug Baldwin and Bobby Wagner step into that breach when you were there?
Well, I think those guys have always been there. I mean, especially since I've left.
Yeah.
It was a little quieter in there. You don't have the Michael Bennett, you don't have the Richard Shermans, you don't have some of the more vocal leaders that this team has enjoyed the last 4 or 5 years. And so it is a little different, but it's the same message coming from the same head coach with the same leader at quarterback. And they have that leader in the back end, and Earl Thomas, if they can get him in the camp or get him paid. But there is some similarity, but it is some differences. I think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle for them this year, quite frankly, but they're built right from a foundation standpoint. So it's one of those things where they could win 7 games or they could win 11 games based on 5 or 6 plays made or not made throughout the season.
Yeah. You just mentioned that Earl Thomas is obviously splitting a lot of fans, a lot of people. As an ex-player, is that something that you can see from both, understand more on this side, or you, or can you, see from both sides of the business side of it and the personal side of it?
I mean, you obviously see it from both sides. Yeah. That's the, I mean, you do, because, I mean, that's always been the knock against completely, you know, when I say completely guaranteed contracts, I'm not talking about the Kirk Cousins completely guaranteed contracts. I'm talking about if you're a third rounder, you know, and you're on your, you know, role player and you got a year or two deal, you know, just like a, just a regular deal, which is enough, which is more than the average person around the world. But it's peanuts in the National Football League. What if that kid on the second year of their contract, they're only supposed to make $2 million, but it's a receiver and they lead the league in receiving, and, you know, in touchdowns. Well, that guy completely outperformed that contract. You know what I'm saying? I do see both sides, but what Earl is going through right now, a lot of players go through. I mean, I went through it almost every year of my career, with the exception of my rookie year. The team, you're playing without any guarantees. You're playing without much security other than the security you have and your abilities. But the thing I can say about Earl is he does give his all. He has given that organization 1,000%. And he does probably deserve a little bump in pay.
Yeah, Adam.
I find the situation a little bit poor, well, difficult for both sides, because you've obviously got there's no one really in the deal that seems to have that much leverage, because ultimately people can say, oh, the team can do this and do that with the tag or whatever. But that having that noise around the locker room and everyone talking about it all day, that can't be helpful for the organization, as much as it's not great for Thomas not being paid and playing.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want that noise around the locker room. But at the end of the day, if he goes, first of all, Earl has sustained a couple of injuries here late in his career. And I think he's thinking about, hey, I mean, Richard Sherman was just covering a normal dig route and blew out his Achilles.
Yeah.
You know, normal tackle that we've seen him make 1,000 times, and boom, career's over. Cliff Avril, boom, career over. Yeah. I think a lot of things have happened to Earl here lately that has him thinking on a different vibe than he was when he was a younger player. And I think he's just looking for some security.
Yeah, we certainly hope that gets resolved, because obviously one of the big things that we've got that's incredibly exciting for us is that the Seahawks are playing in London on October the 14th.
Yes.
As a player, I can imagine they could probably do without the trip, but as fans, I'm sure you can understand we're incredibly looking forward to seeing them all over here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, the game of football is spreading into a worldwide entity. I mean, it's definitely one of the biggest sports, or if not the biggest sport, in America. But I just want, for me, I'm involved in youth football. I'm always about, is the game being taught right? I think, you know, there are numbers that are out, and numbers can be skewed in a lot of different ways, but I don't view the game as having a concussion problem, as having a bad coaching problem, especially on the lower levels. Yeah. And when players get bad habits, they get hurt. And that's just the reality of our game.
That's funny, because in soccer they say that if you don't go into a tackle 100%, you're more likely to get hurt, which I guess is similar if you don't do something full committed with the right technique in American football as well, I guess.
And it's really got to be with the right technique. I mean, and I hate to talk about it because of what happened to him, because it was terrible. And I always send prayers and great energy his way. But the Ryan Shazier hit, I mean, wow. I mean, that was an eye opener. But the kid, you know, that was not a great way to tackle anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, it was with the net head down and the neck absorbed everything. And so that's just an example. We see it hundreds of times on Sunday and Saturdays too, in college and all through high school and all through all the ranks. But it's because we have a lot of Madden coaches, for lack of better words, especially in the lower levels, teaching our kids. And these kids are developing bad habits and taking it with them through high school and college and so on.
So just to stick on this for one more thing, I've never played, so I have no experience what it's like to run with the helmet and the pads. But when I was in America, I put a helmet on and I was actually amazed as to how heavy they are and how tough they are. Do you think almost that in the first few years, these guys could do without playing with helmets at all to learn the right way to tackle, and then they can progress into that level? Or because the helmet is what seems to be the biggest issue for me as someone that's never played.
The journal said it a long time ago. Say, guys, if you want to really protect these guys, take the face mask and the helmet off.
Mm-hmm.
if you want to protect them, take the face mask and the helmet off. I mean, my coaches didn't, I mean, my presidents in my youth football league, they didn't vote on it this year. But I want to have it only one hard helmet practice a week. Most of your concussions and most of your bad injuries happen in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather have, yeah, you can have your equipment on, but have soft shell helmets. I guarantee you kids won't go in head first with soft shell helmets on and no face masks. And you have colleges and some pro teams operating that way now, because as you can see, the rules with this helmet rule and all of those types of things, the game is changing.
Yeah. So obviously you're a bit pushed on, so we're going to try and rest. We've got a couple of questions from our listeners. One that cropped up a few times was, is there any one player you wish you could relive or that sticks in your mind during your NFL or college career?
Oh man. No. Well, the way everything's happened is supposed to happen. That's how I've always felt.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to learn all the lessons I was supposed to learn. So
not change it though, relive it. If you got the chance to just go through that buzz of play again.
To relive it. Not necessarily one play, but probably all of overtime and the Orange Bowl game that we won my last year. Just the drama. The missed kicks, the missed opportunities, the times we took advantage of opportunities. We stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning playing the actual game, you know. So that was fun. That was something I will never, ever forget. I was the most sore that I had ever been in my entire life. Still to this day, the day after that game was the most sore I had ever been in my life. Shout out to Bobby Bowden in Florida State. But yeah, all of overtime, brother. All of overtime.
Were there more tears then, or at the end of the championship game against San Francisco?
Oh, probably end of the championship game. I mean, you got to think, man. Yeah. Going to a Super Bowl, bro. Like that's. Like
I was crying. Yeah. It was 4 a.m. I was crying. Don't worry about me.
I mean, I'm watching these little kids out here right now practice, and I mean, if you ask any of them that are some of the real serious football players, they're gonna all say, "I want to win a Super Bowl one day."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what they're going to say.
So Super Bowl 48, obviously, we all have different experiences with Silo Pond and obviously in Seattle. What was it like to play in a game which was over so early, really, after Percy Harvin's kick return?
It was awesome, man. I didn't get many snaps because, you know, we didn't really punt too much. We didn't have many kickoff returns. We had a lot of kickoffs, but they went out of the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, we ran the ball some, but we just, you know, to me, that was another one of Russell Wilson. Because I mean, he damn near went perfect that game.
Yeah,
you know, had a catch.
I had one early, you know, a little check down, and you know, every time a quarterback steps up in the pocket, and you're a running back, you're getting the ball, brother. but it was all good, man. It was fun to play in that game. Fun to have my family come out. It was on the East Coast. I'm an East Coast guy, so a lot of family and friends were able to catch it and come up to New York.
Yeah. Were you noticeably more nervous that day than any other game?
No, we knew we were going to win. I remember watching a film on Denver probably the Tuesday or Wednesday. Me and Beast, we were in a film room. We were watching it probably the Tuesday or Wednesday right after we had beat San Francisco. And literally, we watched one quarter of one of their games. And we said, oh, man, this shit going to be easy. did I say that out loud? My bad. Yeah.
Don't worry. No one listens to this show. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so, he said, man, it's going to be easy, bro.
One other thing, just quickly back on your visit to VMAG a few weeks ago. Who won the pickup game? You or Pete Carroll?
Oh, actually, you know I beat Pete Carroll. Anybody that got shoes like that and that old, I'm going to talk to him. Okay? You know what I'm saying? Even though Pete do got a little shot, though.
I mean, you see so often on Twitter during training camp when you start chucking the ball around. Do you have to, like, remind yourself that Pete Carroll is a 66-year-old man doing what he does at the energy levels he does it at?
Excuse me, say that again.
When you see Pete Carroll doing what he was doing with you on the basketball court and sort of chucking the ball around before practice, is there any, do you have to like remind yourself as a player or in your role now that this is a 66-year-old man doing this at this level for so long?
Oh, man, well, I mean, you got to think, man. Joe was 235 years old and he still was getting around. The game of football, and you're around young people, it's a young man's sport. The game of football, the nature of it keeps you young. I mean, obviously, as a coach, you can stress yourself out, but that's the stresses you put on yourself. You can't allow the game to put the stresses on you. You got to take it for what it is. It is a game, and you're supposed to have fun playing the game. And that's one thing I really took from Pete. He's really all about having fun, letting players have fun, letting players be themselves. And that's why it was fun coming to work. When I was with San Francisco, I know it's probably different there now, but when I was with San Francisco early in my career, we were losing, and it just wasn't fun to go to work.
Adam, anything?
So are we going to see you in London on October for the Seahawks game, or are you not going to make the trip over?
I have no idea. I'm with the network. They may tell me maybe the week or so before. That's kind of how we do things at the network. But I don't know. We'll see, brother. But if I come over, expect me on your podcast again.
Yeah.
You better be.
Open the invite. When we posted on all our social medias that you were lucky enough to be having you on our podcast, the most common thing was how much you are missed in Seattle, you are missed on the field, and how much they appreciated all your effort as a Seahawks. I think I'd be doing our listeners a disservice I didn't pass the message on. We do appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, brother.
Is there anything you want? Where can people catch up with you? Obviously, the NFL Network.
On social media and stuff. Yeah, NFL Network. My shows are Good Morning Football Weekend on Saturdays and Sundays, early in the morning on the East Coast. Obviously, all my social media is Real Mike Rob. You can check me out on all of them. I usually do a Facebook Live on Thursdays. I do Periscope Live throughout the season. Check me out. Give me a follow. Instagram, Real Mike Rob also. Give me a follow, man, and get all the latest stuff.
Yeah.
When are we getting a return for the R&B podcast?
Man, you know, Nate doing his thing. You know, I'm doing my thing. You know, it's just...
That was a good show. I liked it.
They broke us up. Well, trust me, man. I had so many more ideas for that show. But, you know, I wanted it to be more than a podcast. I wanted it to be a show, you know, where we actually get into some stuff. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, yeah. It sounds like you both have to come to London and we'll do the first relaunch on our London podcast. It sounds like that's a deal for me.
There you go. Let's get it.
Yeah, and also, do you want to plug the youth league as well?
Yeah, man. My youth football league, E2E, it's Excel to Excellence Youth Football League. You can check it out on the website, e2efootball.org. Again, we talk about football a little differently. We don't talk about football in terms of genetics, meaning we don't talk about football in terms of how fast you run, how hard you hit, how far you can throw a football, all of those things. When you talk about football that way, the powers that be across the world think that football is too violent, totally overlooking the fact that the brain processes that a quarterback or a middle linebacker or some of these cornerbacks, or linemen, any position, some of the brain processes that these guys are doing are totally phenomenal, and they're doing some of the same things that people at Google and Amazon, all of these people that make six figures for the next 30 years, we're doing it on the football field in front of millions of people. With live bullets, so to speak, not real bullets, but you know, football players flying at you.
Yeah, awesome. As I keep saying, massively do appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully there will be another time, but until now, thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks, guys. Y'all be good.
Yeah. Thanks so much, man. We really appreciate it.